Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here. Welcome back to Tesla Daily. Good to be back with the normal setup today after traveling out to AI Day last week. And today, of course, we're going to be breaking down AI Day in as simple of terms as we can. I know it was highly technical, but we'll go through each of the five main topics that Tesla discussed. That was number one, vision. So neural networks and perception, things like that. Planning and control, so how the actual vehicle is operating. Then labeling to train Tesla's neural networks. Then Dojo, so the custom designed Tesla hardware that's going to help them with that training. And then, of course, the Tesla bot that Tesla brought out at the end. Before we even get into any of those topics, though, I think it's important to recognize the clear overarching theme of AI Day, which to me is that Tesla clearly has a deeply vertically integrated cross-disciplinary AI team that is building things that are going into products today, obviously with the cars, but over time, Tesla's ability to leverage that team and leverage that technology is only going to grow. To borrow a phrase from Elon, this is not well understood. So keeping that in mind, let's go through these five areas. We'll start off with vision, just as Tesla did in their presentation. This was Andre Karpathy, and he did say a lot of things that we've heard him talk about before, but he did share some new details and, importantly, some great examples of what Tesla has done. One of the primary focuses of Andre's section, and this is something we've heard him and Elon talk a lot about, was Tesla's conversion over from the image space to vector space. So before, Tesla was basically taking a bunch of still frames, single images, from each of the eight cameras on the vehicle, running each of those images through their neural networks individually, and then basically making decisions based on what the neural network perceived from each of those images. That sort of isolation in the processing has a lot of downsides, though. We don't need to rehash all that, but a lot of that can be improved by switching over to what Tesla calls vector space, which you could think of as three-dimensional versus image space being two-dimensional. So I think if we peek ahead to the labeling section, this part's more clear. Andre gives an example of 2D image labeling. So you basically just have a still frame and you're drawing a bunch of polygons around relevant items in the scene. You have to do that for every single image from every single camera, which, as you can see, would take a lot of time. Now, with a vector, what you're doing is instead of looking at an individual pixel, you're basically modeling the scene with a series of mathematical formulas, which is stitching together the images from the eight cameras into essentially a three-dimensional scene. So now instead of that one image, you have a composite of eight different images, and that gives you a lot more context, which helps with all sorts of things from depth recognition to velocity to labeling, which we'll talk more about later. So this is rather easily said, but extremely difficult to do. Tesla is doing it. And what they're also doing is adding in a fourth dimension, so the element of time. This brings in more context for those elements that I just mentioned, but then also adds another level of awareness, particularly for things that may be temporarily blocked from view, maybe a pedestrian crossing the street when you're taking a left turn at a green light, but you first have to wait for an oncoming semi to clear the intersection. That's going to block the pedestrian, but the neural network still will realize that pedestrian is there. And then one other thing that Tesla did mention that I hadn't heard them talk about before, but also makes complete sense, is not just a temporal memory, but also a spatial memory. So if you're sitting at a stoplight, maybe the time-based memory doesn't go back quite far enough to remember what you had just passed through, but the space-based memory would because you have not moved. So the key takeaway from the vision section is that Tesla has shifted over to vector space. Again, this is something we knew they were doing, not a huge surprise, but requires some creative solutions, a lot of hard work, and Andre did say that they still have things that they can optimize for. But fundamentally, Tesla does believe that this is the correct architecture to be able to solve the driving problem. So from perception or vision, you then move into planning and control. Once you understand the world, you have to navigate around in it. So this section was presented by Ashok, Tesla's director of autopilot software. And he started off by noting that the objective of planning is to get the car to where it's supposed to be, obviously, while maximizing safety, comfort, and efficiency. He highlighted two key problems. So number one, non-convex, and number two, high-dimensional. This maybe is not super intuitive, so to understand what non-convex means, we have to understand what convex means. That just means that there is one optimal solution. That makes it relatively easy to find that solution and then apply it to a lot of different circumstances, and it will always be the optimal solution. But a non-convex problem is going to have multiple different optimal solutions, so then finding something that you can apply globally becomes way more difficult. That's partially why it's a little bit unintuitive, because you would think, oh, more solutions, that's easier, but that is definitely not the case. Anyway, the second problem he highlighted is high dimensional. So he's just saying that there are a lot of parameters involved in controlling the vehicle, and the planning has to happen 10, 15 seconds out. So it's a lot to calculate on the fly. So to do this, Tesla's autopilot planning system is doing 2,500 different path planning searches every 1.5 milliseconds. So 1.7 million searches every second, if that's more understandable. Each of those searches will then result in different parameters for the vehicle. Those parameters will have an impact on the lateral acceleration, the lateral jerk. Tesla can use that then to optimize for comfort or smoothness of ride, which is one of the elements that they discussed, alongside, of course, safety and efficiency. So that already sounds crazy, but then what Tesla is doing is not only running that planning system on that individual car, but also for all the other relevant items in the scene as picked up by the vision system. So there's perception, planning, and then prediction, which is also being handled for other vehicles by that planning system. Ashok gave a really nice example of this on a single lane road with Tesla playing sort of that yield chicken game with a couple other vehicles. Just as with vision, and Andre saying that there are still optimizations that Tesla can make there in terms of perception, Ashok noted that there are still lots of optimizations that Tesla can make for planning as well. So this is where Ashok talked about integrating neural networks actually into the planning system. He gave an example of a car trying to find a spot in a parking lot and showed that the integration of a neural network in this case cut the number of searches essentially that the planning system had to perform down from a range of 20,000 to 400,000 all the way to about 300. Obviously quite a bit more efficient. Now, this part was a little bit unclear. Tesla's not actually doing that in the actual vehicles yet today, but they went through that example because they envision that as being a part of the final architecture that they are working towards. Elon did say in the Q&A that he does think that ultimately that's the right choice, but that even if that didn't work out, you could still have full self-driving at a level safer than humans, even just coding the planning system in C++, so hard coding it for lack of a better term. All right, so that was vision and planning and control. Obviously, a lot of neural network integration in there. Tesla needs to have a way to train neural networks, and they do that through labeling. So Tesla's neural networks have hundreds of millions of parameters. To train those parameters, they need millions and millions of vector space examples that are labeled. So a few years ago when Tesla started heading down this path, they were using a third party to help them with that labeling, but there was just not nearly enough output, took way too long. So Tesla brought that in-house. They now have a 1,000-person data labeling team. They're co-located with the engineers for close collaboration. That has helped, but Tesla still needs to increase the throughput of labeling. So as we talked about in the vision section, one of the ways that Tesla has found to be able to do this is to convert over to vector space from image space. So instead of labeling all of these single images, the labelers can go into that 3D composite model, label directly on that, and that can be, Andre said, reprojected out to the individual cameras. Tesla said that that increased labeling throughput by 100 times. Still, that level of throughput not going to be enough. So what Tesla has started to do is auto-labeling to solve that labeling constraint. To do auto-labeling, Tesla collects clips from the fleet, and then once they have those clips back at their headquarters, they can actually do a lot more analysis because they have a lot more compute available to them in that offline setting. That allows them to run various neural networks on those clips, create 3D point clouds, stitch clips together from different times or different vehicles to validate what the neural network is seeing, and have the benefit of hindsight and foresight when evaluating those clips. So with all those things going on, Tesla's neural networks can apply labels. A human can then come in and check that as valid, or more quickly make an adjustment versus starting from scratch, or add any metadata that may be helpful. I would have loved for them to go into a little bit more detail on that because it's still a little confusing to me how it's all done. But the most important part to understand is that Tesla is already doing this auto-labeling. This helped them dramatically in the shift over to pure vision, allowing them to eliminate radar. And Ashok showed a really good example of where Tesla is able to actually query their fleet, pull specific circumstances, throw those circumstances into the auto-labeler, and train the neural network very rapidly through that process. Tesla here also showed off their simulation engine for, I believe, the first time, which I think obviously looked great, but then Tesla also showed how they essentially recreate scenes that are captured directly from autopilot cameras to look extremely similar in the simulation so that it takes into account things like different levels of exposure or noise or motion blur so as to match the input that the actual cameras are seeing in real life. Tesla can then run the autopilot system versus simulations for situations that maybe don't occur frequently enough in real life to collect a lot of data from, but that Tesla still needs to make sure the system can handle properly. And then they also talked about how the simulation can obviously help with labeling because the labels can be known just as a process of creating the simulation. Even with simulation though, Tesla believes that the data that they collect in real life from the fleet is critical and that simulation acts as an augmentation to that data. So that brings us through vision, planning, and labeling. The next section was the highly anticipated Project Dojo. So all that stuff that we just talked about, training these neural networks, labeling millions of vector space video clips, that all takes a lot of computing power outside of the vehicle where Tesla is building and training these models. So Dojo is Tesla's in-house custom-designed hardware to meet their computing needs. One of those needs is extremely high bandwidth. So an easy way to think about bandwidth, if you had an external hard drive plugged into your computer, it's going to take longer to work with those files than it would to work just off of a local drive, and that's because of bandwidth limits. So Ganesh, the person leading the project and presenting Dojo, talked at the beginning about how it's easy to scale compute, difficult to scale bandwidth, and extremely difficult to reduce latencies. So anytime you're talking about supercomputer level scale, people like to look at just raw operations per second, but that doesn't necessarily tell the full story, and that's why Tesla spent a lot of time talking about bandwidth, specifically with Dojo. Higher bandwidth means increased scalability and higher productivity. Ganesh said at the beginning of the presentation that Tesla wanted to address latency and bandwidth as their primary optimization points. So it's very important to keep that in mind with Dojo. With that in mind, let's take a very simple look at how this architecture comes together. I promise this will be understandable. And it all starts with the individual nodes. A node is just a connection point in a network that can send or receive or store or create data. So Tesla's node design here is capable of doing more than one TFLOP, so more than 1 trillion floating point operations per second, 1 teraflop, and then 354 of these individual nodes are connected. That forms the basis of the D1 Dojo 1 chip. So if each of the training nodes can do more than 1 trillion floating point operations per second, while you combine 354 of them, that gets you up to 362 TFLOPs for that D1 chip. Tesla does note that 362 TFLOPs, that is at BF16 precision, so BFloat 16. That's a commonly used format for machine learning, but at single precision, so FP32, the operations per second would be fewer. We've talked about that before, so I don't want to distract too much by going into too much detail on that, but basically just higher precision numbers are going to take longer to calculate, but aren't needed for all use cases, so in some cases lower precision, higher calculation speed is going to be more optimal. Anyway, as I said, those 354 nodes, that forms the basis of the D1 chip. Those are then surrounded by the input-output ring, and those facilitate the high bandwidth that Tesla was so focused on. So Ganesh at this point said that they have more than 2 times the bandwidth of the state-of-the-art networking chips, which obviously heavily prioritize bandwidth because they are meant for networking. So that input-output ring that goes around at the training nodes, that gives you the final D1 chip. 25 of these D1 chips go into what Tesla is calling a training tile. Because there are 25 D1 chips on this tile, and each of those does 362 teraflops, that means 25 times 362, it's over 9,000 teraflops, or 9,000 trillion floating point operations per second, also known as 9 petaflops or PFLOPs. At this point, Tesla adds a series of high bandwidth connectors around the perimeter. I had a chance to look at these after the presentation, and they looked like they were maybe a fifth or a sixth of the size of another comparable bandwidth connector, so even though we're going through this quickly, each step has a lot of incredible engineering behind it. From there, the rest of the elements of the tile come in, so power supply, cooling, things like that. And then this 9 petaflop tile becomes essentially, as Ganesh said, the unit of scale for Tesla's Dojo computer. So they put 6 of these tiles into a tray, and then 2 of those trays into each cabinet. So 12 tiles per cabinet, that is 108 petaflops per cabinet. Each cabinet then needs a lot of power and cooling infrastructure. And then Tesla's planning on doing 10 of these cabinets. So that is the exapod that they talked about. It would be 108 petaflops times 10 cabinets. So 1,080 petaflops or 1.1 exaflops. So if we go back to where we started with the node, there are over 1 million of those nodes in this exapod. So an incredible amount of computing power. But again, bandwidth is also critically important here. So Ganesh emphasized that Tesla has so-called broken the cabinet walls by having that extremely high bandwidth between the cabinets. So if Tesla wanted to, they could continue to scale those cabinets up. However, they did talk about working on further optimizations. They believe there's another order of magnitude to be had, which we should eventually see in a D2 chip. In terms of where they're at right now, Tesla had just received one of those training tiles. They're testing some things out on that, and then they are starting their cabinet construction soon. So this will be great for Tesla's internal needs, but as we have discussed in the past, there may be other opportunities here as well to unlock an AWS type of business line for Tesla. I asked Elon about that on the Q1 earnings call, and Tesla in this presentation did highlight the partitionability, the modularity of Dojo as a system, which could effectively create virtual machines on Dojo for other companies to utilize. Elon also clearly confirmed that as a possibility on Twitter after the presentation. The other quick hardware point that got mentioned, and then we'll move into the Tesla bot, was of course the on-car hardware. So we know about the Tesla-designed Hardware 3, or the full self-driving computer, synonymous there. Somebody asked about the next generation of that, unsurprisingly. Elon did confirm they're still working on that, and that the next generation would likely have a camera upgrade as well. But one thing he said that caught a lot of people's attention, including mine, was, quote, "Obviously, there will be a future Hardware 4 or FSD Computer 2, which we'll probably introduce with the Cybertruck, so maybe about a year or so," end quote. So obviously vague language there. It's not entirely clear if Elon means that these will be introduced together in about a year or so, or that it would just come to the Cybertruck first in about a year. People making pretty passionate cases for both sides, I would say. My first reaction was that yes, it did mean a delay for the Cybertruck to about a year from now. Obviously the quote doesn't explicitly say that, but as I have said in the past, I'd be more surprised with the Cybertruck in the first half of next year than the second half. So sure, maybe Elon didn't mean that, but it is another push in that direction for me. Alright, so finally, let's move into the Tesla bot. We of course talked about this in my initial reaction video on Thursday. Obviously, this has tremendous potential. I think it is still very early stage for Tesla. I think they're looking at the things that they are developing and saying, hey, this obviously makes sense, and they need people to come work on it. So I think the biggest question that I've seen raised so far, other than does this even make sense in the first place, is does it make sense to talk about this now? And will this distract Tesla from their other goals? My point of view on this, and you have to view it also through the lens of AI Day being a recruiting event, is that Tesla is showing this to get people in the organization that may not necessarily be interested in the automotive space or the energy space, that are more interested in other areas of robotics. This allows Tesla to recruit and hire those people. Tesla is talking about this now at this early stage to find those people, get them excited, and get them involved in the organization. And then, hey, Tesla can probably also cross-utilize those people to help with Tesla's other projects. So no, I don't think this is a distraction. In fact, I think this loops around to what I said at the very beginning. Tesla is going to continue to find new and better ways to leverage the expertise that they're developing here in artificial intelligence. Remember, when I asked that question about Dojo, Elon did say that long-term, Tesla will be thought of as an AI and robotics company more than a car company. We're just now seeing the very earliest stages of that transformation. The other question that I've seen is, okay, well, how does this fit into Tesla's mission of trying to accelerate the advent of sustainable energy? Well, aside from the obvious answers of a robot potentially being a lot more efficient at completing work and not having to do things like commute, there's also nothing that says that Tesla can't update their mission over time. In fact, they have already done that once, changing from accelerating the advent of sustainable transportation to accelerating the advent of sustainable energy. So I think we will see that mission eventually change again, and I think Elon's giving us a hint to it here on Twitter, not surprising. But he replied to Holmars here saying, quote, "Bot is not directly on the path of accelerating a sustainable energy future, but it aspirationally improves the probability that the future is good," end quote. I would not be at all surprised if in the future we saw Tesla's mission statement updated to Tesla's mission is to increase the probability that the future is good. The other thing you always have to consider too with the things that Elon Musk is doing is the implication for Mars. You should be able to pack a whole lot more of these Tesla bots on a Starship than you could humans. You don't have to worry about oxygen, you don't have to worry about food. And if they are actually capable of doing work, then once they're actually on Mars, they'll be a lot less constrained doing work in that environment than a human would be. Anyway, obviously it's extremely early stages for the Tesla bot, but this is something that eventually could have an incredibly profound impact on the world. So I'm glad that Tesla is thinking about it, that they're working on it, and it'll be very exciting to follow the development. So I think that's AI Day in a nutshell. Let me know what you guys think, what else you have questions on. Again, I think it's just important to emphasize that Tesla is clearly a leader in artificial intelligence. And just like how we always talk about Tesla's operational leverage being completely underrated, I think we are already and will continue to see an underrating of their leverage of artificial intelligence. I do also just want to take a quick second and say thank you to the Tesla employees that came up and introduced yourself to me at AI Day. I didn't quite realize we had as many listening as apparently we do. Just want to thank everybody for all their hard work. And like I tweeted during the event, I'm very thankful to have the opportunity to invest in such an innovative company. Anyway, we will wrap it up there, but this will not be the last time that we talk about AI Day. I still think there are some things too that people aren't really thinking about with the Tesla bot. Doesn't quite fit into today's episode, but maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that in the future. Anyway, as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. If you want to support what I'm doing here, that does mean a lot. You can do that at patreon.com/Tesla Daily Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, August 24th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.